Going on, guys? On today's pod, I'm covering Trump's famous walk back, walk forward strategy. Also bringing back some segments in case you missed it, Rotting Out with Fox, and our new segment, Let's Talk America. So let's motor. Excuse My Politics, presented by Bad News Media. It is July 19th, and President Trump has officially completed his I walk it back, I walk it forward routine. That's right. If you haven't been paying attention too closely to the ongoing story of the Helsinki summit, you need to get subscribed to Excuse My Politics, because you obviously aren't doing your job in being the change. So sign up on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you got to do. Make sure you subscribe to keep up with all the crazy. But to get you kind of caught up to speed, Donald Trump flew to Helsinki, met with Vladimir Putin for 2 hours by himself. Then the delegations met. Then they held a joint press conference where Donald Trump proceeded to side with Putin over U.S. intelligence agencies in claiming that, you know, Russia did not actually meddle in the 2016 election. He then went on Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, did some interviews with them after the press conference where he then doubled down on that assertion. Turns out, though, nobody was very happy with it. Go figure. Americans do not like when their president stands next to Vladimir Putin and sides with him over the U.S. Now, that was a disaster. Even Newt Gingrich, Donald Trump fanboy, was angry with him. So Donald Trump did his famous, I'm going to kind of walk it back, but also walk it forward to its original spot. And he did that with the all-time move, the American public is stupid and didn't actually see it. So I'm going to make up a, it was just a classic mistake of the wrong word being used. So in his walk back during the press conference, he initially said I don't see any reason why it would be Russia in his press or in his walk back attempt. He simply said, I meant to say wouldn't. But then he walked it forward because he followed that up with, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could it be other people also? There's a lot of people out there. That is always his clarifying statement. He doesn't necessarily deny that there was interference or election meddling that occurred in 2016, but to go as far as to say it was Putin, it was Russia, he has yet to do that. He always says, well, it could have been China, it could have been a 400-pound man in New Jersey, it could have been anybody other than Russia, basically. Now, this is becoming really bad for him because the New York Times disclosed this week that weeks before his inauguration, Trump's inauguration, Trump was shown emails and texts from a Russian spy showing definitively that Putin ordered the interference into the U.S. election and that Russians carried it out. So now we have the Senate coming to the conclusion that there was interference in our elections by Russia. We have the House coming to the same conclusion. We have all of our intelligence agencies, all of them, not a single one, disputes that Russia meddled in our election. And we have a Russian spy's emails and texts that definitively show, apparently, that Putin was not only aware but ordered the interference and that it was carried out. Still, to this day, Donald Trump refuses to say Vladimir Putin played a role in this, and Russia interfered in our election. So, what does that mean? Well, it's kind of obvious. Russia has something on Donald Trump, is my belief. I don't see any other way you explain this. And you might say, well, what does he have? Well, Some people point to the P-tape. Some people point to financial leverage. Some people point to collusion. I think it's a mixture of all three. And here's why. First is the money. I think money, financial leverage over Donald Trump is pretty much a given at this point. For years, Trump relied heavily on debt. He called himself the king of debt. But all of a sudden, his business became cash heavy when it was previously cash strapped. And he started purchasing things in all cash. So the Washington Post reported earlier this year, in about 9 years before he ran for president, Donald Trump's company spent more than $400 million in cash on new properties. That included 14 transactions paid for in full without borrowing from banks. During a buying binge, it's been described as defying real estate industry practices, and Trump's own business as a self-described debt king. Now, it's been shown that Trump had access to far more cash than previously known, despite his string of commercial bankruptcies, as well as the Great Recession. Jeez, I can't speak right now. You'd think I'd be drinking or something. I wish. hammering the real estate industry. Now, there was a very interesting 2014 interview done by James Dotson, a golf writer, in North Carolina, the elder Trump's new golf course. Now, during Dotson's time on the course with Eric Trump, Dotson asked where Trump was kind of getting all his money from. And Eric just kind of threw out, according to him, he just sort of tossed out that they had access to $100 million. So Dotson dug in and asked, and I quote from Dotson, "Eric, who's funding? I know no banks because of the recession, the Great Recession, have touched a golf course. You know, no one's funding any kind of golf construction. It's dead in the water the last 4 or 5 years." And then he says that Eric responded, "Well, we don't really rely on American banks. We have all the funding we need out of Russia." Dotson then said, "Really?" And he said, "Oh, yeah. We've got some guys that really, really love golf, and they're really invested in our program. We just got there. We just go there all the time." I mean, it's right here. If that is true, and James Dotson is not making up this conversation, then that would explain part of what I believe is a triangle of reasons as to why Donald Trump refuses to go be strong with Vladimir Putin in Russia. It's because they have financial leverage on him. The second piece to this triangle is the collusion aspect. Now, we do not know nearly as much as Mueller knows, as the intelligence community knows. We find these things out months after they find this stuff out. So there isn't anything definitively saying that members of the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. But this is what we do know. Trump is not exactly a right and wrong guy. He doesn't view things in those terms. He is a win-at-all-sums person. He staffed his campaign with win-at-all-costs individuals. And that manifested itself in a real ugly way when Trump Jr., Jared, and Paul Manafort met with Russian officials at Trump Tower. That is the big known puzzle piece into what could be a picture of collusion. These are people that do not stop to think, is this right or wrong? They think, does this help us achieve our goals? And that goal was to win an election. So if I'm Russia and I'm meddling in the U.S. election, we've already heard from Vladimir Putin and the Russian state media that Donald Trump was the horse they were betting on and wanted to win. Why wouldn't you try to reach out to these guys? Why wouldn't you try to see if you could get an in into the Trump organization and help this process along? So there's a very strong possibility, I believe, that there is a Russian collusion piece to this. And then the third part of that triangle is the P-tape, sex aspect of leverage that Russia could have over Donald Trump. Now, we know, thanks to Stormy Daniels and others, that Donald Trump believes that he is entitled to women. He has himself said this through his infamous Hollywood Access tape and him admitting that he could just walk in on teenagers getting dressed for his pageants. He also does not believe in his marriage vows. He has cheated multiple times on his wives. So right now, we know the Steele dossier has been pretty accurate in a lot of its accusations. It's been viewed as a credible dossier. Not all of it, but good portions of it have been viewed as credible by our intelligence community. Donald Trump went over to Russia. Now, he believes that Vladimir Putin did not, when he was a businessman, did not know that he was there, which is a ridiculous claim. Because anybody worth their salt, as I said on the last pod, knows that if a U.S. official, a U.S. businessman, somebody who appears to be a successful businessman in the case of Donald Trump, they are, as soon as their passport is swiped into Russia, going to be spied on. Their rooms are probably going to be bugged. There will be somebody probably watching them, gathering information. That is what Russia does. I do not believe for a moment that if Donald Trump was presented with the opportunity to engage in extramarital affairs while in Russia, that he did not take up that opportunity. I don't know if there's a P tape out there, but I bet there's probably some form of sexual leverage on him, which completes that triangle, where I think everybody's kind of theories of what is, there's a little bit of everybody's theories as to what Vladimir Putin might be holding on him that probably has some legs to run with. I think the financial one's the biggest one where you can pretty much say, yeah, if there's going to be something, that's definitely where you're going to find it. So what should we be doing? Well, it's obvious, but it's going to require participation from some Republicans. This is the chance for the Jeff Flakes and the Bob Cokers of the world to actually take some meaningful actions to see what's going on. But that's going to require the one cardinal sin that has been built in to this new wave of Republican leadership, and that is reaching across the aisle to work with Democrats. That is a cannot do in this new political model that runs within the Republican Party. It's a cardinal sin. But that's what it's going to require. Because at no point are you going to get enough Republicans to buy in to subpoenaing Trump business financial statements. You're not going to get enough to buy into taking this Russia investigation seriously. You're going to have to cross the aisle and work with Democrats. But there's been an ecosystem within the Republican Party that has been built that says you cannot do that. You cannot reach across the aisle on big things like this, because the Democrats are the enemy, always and forever. And by doing that, you become a rhino, a Republican in name only, not a true-blooded Republican. But that's the beautiful thing about Coker and the Jeff Flakes of the world, is they're not running anymore. Now, they still have it in the back of their minds that they can't really work with Democrats because of places like Fox News and donors who turned away and actually ran ads against Republicans who did look to just try to work with Democrats on things like the ACA or other initiatives that the Obama administration tried to get done. But that's where the voters have to come in. We have to be louder. So if you're represented by a Republican who saw what happened in Helsinki and was distraught over it, issuing public statements, call them. Apply pressure on them to work with Democrats to create legislation and pass legislation that puts checks on the president, that requires that presidents disclose their tax returns. Call them and tell them that the president should have his business transactions subpoenaed. See what could be there. Let's shine some light on some dark places. But that's going to require also to take an examination on a big part of the Republican Party, and that's Fox News. And that brings us to our segment, Rotting Out with Fox. So if you've been paying attention to Excuse My Politics, you know that I personally do not like Fox News. I believe they are a cancer on the soul of our democracy. I believe that they have rotted out the Republican Party slowly but surely and created it into this Frankenstein monster we're seeing today, where you cannot work with Democrats, where you have to be utterly ridiculous in every sense of the word and blindly follow people like Donald Trump. But even with Donald Trump's performance at Helsinki, you saw a lot of Fox News personalities really kind of give it to him. Except for, and by give it to him, I mean in like the kitty glove version that Fox News has. But still, they were not happy. With the exception of two of Fox News' biggest clowns, Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, who are currently broadcasting deep within inside the anal canals of Donald Trump. But both of them had interviews with Donald Trump after the Helsinki meeting, but there was one part of that Tucker Carlson segment that I wanted to play for you today. Let's roll the clip.
So membership in NATO obligates the members to defend any other member that's attacked. That's so right. Let's say Montenegro, which joined last year, is attacked. Right. Why should my son go to Montenegro to defend it from attack?
I
why is that?
I understand what you're saying. I've asked the same question. You know, Montenegro is a tiny country with very strong people.
Yeah, I'm not against Montenegro or Albania.
No, by the way, they're very strong people. They're very aggressive people. They make it aggressive. And congratulations, you're in World War III. Now, I understand that, but that's the way it was set up.
So that's not a definitive answer, obviously, but the president clearly had been thinking about it, and good for him. Presidents are supposed to wonder about things like that. Serious countries ought to have debates like that. The U.S. has to defend Montenegro? Really? Why is that? Is there a good reason? Let's hear it.
Okay, that's bad. And it's bad for a whole lot of reasons. But let's have the conversation, since Mr. Fart's brains over there doesn't seem to get it. What Tucker Carlson is referring to, a.k.a. Fart Brain, is Article 5 of NATO. Basically what it states is that if another NATO country is attacked, that the other countries of NATO come to its defense. It's kind of the main pillar of NATO, basically. What makes it what it is? NATO was founded in 1949. Since its foundation, there have been no major European wars. Before that, I don't know, we had World War II, World War I, the French-Persian War, just to name a few. Would rather not have World War III. And NATO has been, in Article 5 of NATO, has been a big reason because of that. Now, there are other things like global trade, nuclear weapons that factor into that, but that is a big point of it. Think of it this way. You're at a bar. You're with a group of your buddies. You're in that group. One of your buddies gets bumped by some big giant dude named, I don't know, we'll call him Vlad. Vlad turns to him and is about to sock him in the face, but then realize that he is surrounded by tons of friends, including one bad motherfucker named Uncle Sam. Vlad decides, not the best idea to punch this guy in the face. Let's walk away. Now, run that same scenario over again, but this friend is not with anybody. Gets bumped, bumps into Vlad. Vlad sees he's not with anybody and stabs him in the neck with a bottle. That is where we're at, basically. Now, here's another little fun fact that Fart Brains seem to leave out in his Montenegro example. Montenegro joined NATO last year under the Trump administration. Michael Flynn actually played a big role in advocating for their acceptance into NATO. Before they even joined NATO, they were involved in Afghanistan, where they have troops currently to this day fighting beside American soldiers. They did not have to go when we were attacked during 2011, when the only time Article 5 has been invoked since the history of NATO, where all those countries in NATO, went with us into Afghanistan after we were attacked. Montenegro is not part of that. They have sent troops before becoming part of NATO and are now currently serving next to American soldiers. So Mr. Fartbrains, stick out of the stuff you don't know. And that was rotting out with Fox. Now, you might have missed some things in the news because it is so chaotic. So let's get to our new segment in case you missed it. Now, you may not have missed this part, but it's the part that I'm going to get to here. And that is the arrest of 29-year-old Russian national Maria Butina, who is right now facing charges of spying on the United States. That part you may have heard of. Her work, though, was with a group called the NRA. May have heard of them as well, especially if you listen to Excuse My Politics. This week, though, there was a big change in the tax code. On Monday, and this is the part you may have missed, on Monday, the IRS announced a rules change. Until now, tax-exempt groups under Section 501C of the tax code have had to identify donors of $5,000 or more on their annual tax returns. But under this new rule, 501C3 charters will still have to identify their most generous donors to the IRS, but 501C4 social welfare organizations and 501C6 business associations will not. This is a problem because it makes already what is a secret political slush fund even more secretive. As Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, pointed out in a statement, Trump's Treasury Department made it easier for anonymous foreign donors to funnel dark secret money into nonprofits, which is what Maria had helped do. Let's talk, America. Is this what we want? Do we want a system where foreign money can flow in? This isn't just a Republican problem. This isn't just a Democratic problem. It happens on both sides of the aisle. For too long, we have allowed non-U.S. person money to flow into our election cycles. For too long, we've allowed big donors to control too much of our political system. And that should change this November. This November, we should elect officials who are willing to make a radical change to the way our elections and our democracy is run. We should mandate that our candidates have a plan in place for when they get into office on how to change our current finance laws. It shouldn't be about who can write the biggest check. It should be about who can turn out the most votes. Our democracy depends on it. We shouldn't have races focused on who can drum up the most money, but who can drum up the best ideas to move this country forward, to get us to where our citizens need to be. Progress will only happen if we allow votes to count more than checkbooks. We need to have politicians that are fearful of the voters, not the donors. And that is what this November election, in part, should be about. So I ask you, I beg of you, make this a priority when you talk to your senators or representatives, when you go to the ballot box. Vote for candidates who are going to play a role in redeveloping our political system as far as money and voting goes. Be the change. And with that, I bid you adieu. Our speech this week is from a very special man who would have had his 100th birthday this week, Nelson Mandela. Enjoy.
Friends, I am privileged to be here today at the invitation of the campaign to make poverty history. As you know, I recently formally announced my retirement from public life and should really not be here. However, as long as poverty, injustice, and gross inequality persist in our world, none of us can truly rest. Moreover, the Global Campaign for Action Against Poverty represents such a noble cause that we could not decline the invitation. Massive poverty and obscene inequality are such terrible scourges of our time, times in which the world boasts breathtaking advances in science, technology, industry, and wealth accumulation, that they have to rank alongside slavery and apartheid as social evils. The global campaign for action against poverty can take its place as a public movement alongside the movement to abolish slavery and the international solidarity against apartheid. And I can never thank the people of Britain enough for their support through those days of struggle against apartheid. Many stood in solidarity with us, just a few yards from this spot. Through your will and passion, you assisted in consigning that evil system forever to history. But in this new century, millions of people in the world's poorest countries remain imprisoned, enslaved, and in chains. They are trapped in the prison of poverty. It is time to set them free. Like slavery and apartheid, poverty is not natural. It is man-made, and it can be overcome and eradicated by the actions of human beings. And overcoming poverty is not a gesture of charity. It's the protection of a fundamental human right. The right to dignity and a decent life. While poverty persists, there is no true freedom. The steps that are needed from the developed nations are clear. The first is ensuring trade justice. I have said before that trade justice is the truly meaning way for the developed countries to show commitment to bringing about an end to global poverty. The second is an end to the debt crisis for the poorest countries. The third is to deliver much more aid and make sure it is of the highest quality. In 2005, there is a unique opportunity for making an impact. In September, world leaders will gather in New York to measure progress since they made the Millennium Declaration in the year 2000. That declaration promised to have to halve extreme poverty. But at the moment, the promise is falling tragically behind. Those leaders must now honor their promises to the world's poorest citizens. Tomorrow, here in London, the G7 finance ministers can make a significant beginning. I am happy to have been invited to meet with them. The G8 leaders, when they meet in Scotland in July, have already promised to focus on the issue of poverty, especially in Africa. I say to all those leaders, Do not look the other way. Do not hesitate. Recognize that the world is hungry for action, not words. Act with courage and vision. I am proud to wear the symbol of this global call to action in 2005. This white band is from my country. In a moment, I want to give this band to you, young people of Britain, and ask you to take it forward, along with millions of others, to the G8 summit in July. I entrust it to you. I'll be watching with anticipation. We thank you for coming here. Sometimes it falls upon a generation to be great. You can be that great a generation. Of course, the task will not be easy, but not to do this would be a crime against humanity, against which I asked all humanity now to rise up, make poverty history in 2005. Make history in 2005. Then we can all stand with our heads held high. I thank you.